on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. My name is Keith Brown-Eal. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. Today, host Jeff Humfield is joined by me and two other formerly incarcerated citizens to talk about the difference between the violence they experienced on the cell block and what they see happening in their own neighborhood. Then, in the second half of the show, we return with our guests and open the phone lines for your comments and questions. Have your pencils and paper ready for our calendar in the middle of the show. And don't forget the 420 drug war news at the end of the show. Up next is Jeff, Keith, and their guests.
Well, this is Jeff Humfield, and I want to welcome you to this edition of Jaws of Justice Radio. Our perception of what prison is like is shaped by the news and entertainment media, as well as the political discourse that seems to get more punitive every year. One side will talk about all the perks and country club atmosphere, while in courtrooms across the nation, prisoners and family members are bringing lawsuits to force the authorities to provide things like the health care and access they feel that are their rights. Something you very seldom hear is the voice of those who have been in prison. This may be because we as a society have institutionalized the notion that once you have been convicted, you cannot really ever reform or change. We have a number of laws that continue to punish people even after they have returned to society. Today, we are going to focus on the subject of violence in prison, what kind of mindset one carries behind bars to survive. Can those attitudes be changed while still behind bars? And can they be left behind when returning to society at large? We also want to ask if our guests see those same attitudes and mindsets that are needed in prison on our streets today and in our neighborhoods of our city. You can find many studies and a plethora of statistics by going to the U.S. Justice Department website and various universities that have conducted research. Today, we are going to listen to personal stories of just a few, not the academic studies that look at the trends of the many. We will be addressing the experiences of men. In the future, we hope to have a panel of women to discuss their experiences as well. And I want to say hello to our guest this morning, Al Bay.
Good morning.
And, of course, my co-host and all today, Keith Brown-Eal.
Morning.
We want to welcome you both to Jaws of Justice Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like each of you to give me an example or give our listeners an example of a myth that people, you know, that's perpetrated by the media or politicians about prison and what it's like in prison that you think people need to understand is just not true.
Well, the biggest myth that's always told is that you can't believe anything prisoners or tell you, that they are habitual liars and that the prison officials always are the ones who tell the truth. And when the truth and the reality is that the prison officials, in many cases, they do more lying than the prisoners do, and they have to in order to sustain the status quo.
What I want to speak on briefly was the adjustment that you have to make. I mean, I guess the public believes that it's a resort, maybe, that you just go in there and everything's easy. But you have to adjust. You know, coming off of the streets, coming out of society, you have to adjust to a system where the inmates are preying on each other, and the police, are, a lot of times, the guards are pretty brutal towards the inmates. And it's a big adjustment.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about that mindset, that change that you have to make. What are some of the things that you have to do? I mean, you're constantly having to watch your back and all. What kind of things do, you know, what kind of changes do you make in your habits and what you do day to day and how you carry yourself once you get behind the bars?
Well, for me, I believe the first thing you have to do is develop a mindset that what you want to do is come out on the other side one day, you know, depending on how long your sentence or how short your sentence is. There are ways that you can adjust by starting a program or adopting a program of working in the system, not so much becoming a part of the system, but working in the system to appeal to the parole board. I mean, there's just certain things they look for as far as your accomplishments. So, you know, you have to go in there with a positive mindset and work towards that.
Well, my experience was somewhat different. Every prison is not the same, and you have to, in many cases, adjust your mindset to whatever the conditions are in the environment that you happen to be living in. In my case, I perceived that when I arrived in prison and the era of time that I was introduced to the penal system, that I was in a very dangerous situation, you know, and, you know, you had people that they didn't think their processes out very thoroughly before they reacted. You know, it was an environment where there were predators, and a predator only understands one thing, is that is to prey on other people. And when I'm speaking of predators, I'm not just talking about prison inmates. I'm talking about the staff members as well. In some environments, you have to be feared and respected. You know, fear is equated with respect. And a lot of times you have to do things that you really don't want to do, you know, to make people understand that you won't be their prey, you know. And this is what results in a lot of violence sometimes, because violence always gets the point across. I mean, you can try everything else to make somebody understand that, but when you got blood on your hands, people pay attention.
Okay. What kind of violent acts have you guys seen, or did you guys experience maybe yourself while you were behind bars? I mean, you know, we always hear this thing, or at least we have on this show, that, you know, when you get to prison, one of the first things that's going to happen is you are going to be tested. And what, you know, what are those kind of tests that people experience when they first get to prison?
Well, the first test that you probably will encounter will be by the prison staff. You know, you have prisoners, they stand back and they observe how you react to certain situations. If you let the staff members talk to you any type of way, then, you know, you have prisoners, they're standing back and observing this, and, you know, that may cause you to be perceived as being soft, you know, because you don't want to go to the hole and do time in the hole. Or, you know, you're afraid that the guards and the staff might try to beat you up if you stand up for yourself. So the prisoners interpret that as, you know, that gives them some leverage also to try to work their predatory instincts and direct those at you in a way where, you know, they can profit or perceive some type of advantage from that.
Like Keith, I went in the institution back in the 70s and got out in the 80s, so we're talking about a nice little span of time, but I did see pretty much the gamut when it comes to violence perpetrated by both the inmates and the guards. I've actually saw people murdered right in front of my eyes. I've saw people who were robbed and sexually attacked. So, I mean, you know, it was the gamut, you know. And like Keith said, you have to really be on your toes coming in, because people are going to try you. It could be as subtle as just the type of language they use towards you. And it's all part of the test, you know. A lot of young men feel like they have to be physical, you know, coming in, you know. And Like Keith said, this oftentimes, you know, gets people's attention. You know, if you're willing to defend yourself by whatever means necessary, then people will leave you alone. So, I mean, you know, it's just about how you approach it.
Okay, you know, one of the ways that we protect ourselves in a larger group is we create subgroups. We create alliances, or we create, you know, friendships or whatever, And knowing, you know, we develop that trust in this person or that person and know that we can stand back to back with them and defend ourselves from anything that comes at us. How does that kind of dynamic play out within the prison setting? You know, I imagine that it would be very difficult to trust anybody in a situation like that because everybody's got something to lose. So, you know, how did that play out? Did you see that play out behind the bars?
In the environment that I was in, your survival in many cases depended on being able to trust people. It takes some effort to be able to distinguish people that you can trust or not, and that's another part of the test. You know, you put people through various situations where, you know, you try to determine whether or not they are trustworthy. You know, and as you develop these relationships, as time goes on, the bond of trust it becomes stronger and stronger, or if you determine that some people are not trustworthy, then you kind of shy away from them and you don't give them your trust. But trust is just as much a method of survival in prison as it is anywhere out on the street. The human condition necessitates being able to trust people, regardless of where you are. Being able to have a friend or somebody you can count on when you are in need or you have to have a support network.
I agree with Keith. Trust is a big issue. I mean, if you can establish that among some comrades in the institution, then you'll do well. I was fortunate. I mean, the first couple of years, I was getting in trouble, staying in the hole, doing a year in the basement and whatnot for my behavior. So I had to really kind of get to a point to resolve how I was going to spend this time. So, I mean, it was fortunate for me that I was able to come into an organization that allowed me to kind of steel myself, you know. And behind that, you know, there was a lot of people who I was able to actually confide in. So I was able to build a strong trust, and things went well for me on that behalf.
You know, you, Al, kind of, alluded to groups and, you know, communities building within your own circle of friends or whatever. What are some of those groups? I mean, we hear a lot, you know, out in the public about gangs behind bars and all this other stuff. But, you know, what are some of these groups? Are there really gangs like that? Or are there? Are we talking other divisions, other groupings of people?
Well, Jeff, once again, I'm gonna go back to the point that I initially made. I was released in 1988, so I can't speak on behalf of today. You know what's going on right now, but there was numerous groups back then, even, you know, that you could resort to. The Muslim organization, the Moorish organization. They had a Black Studies group, you know, and all these were well-respected organizations in the institution. So and then the institution itself had certain programs that were established, you know. Then you had a strong Christian base there. So, I mean, there was various groups that you could align yourself with that, you know, would help you along that journey.
In the later years, they started developing these street gang groups in prison, you know, as they began to trickle into the system. You know, you had Crips and Bloods, you had people from various neighborhoods, you know, you had the Gangster Disciples, which are now known as the Growth and Development, which is a more positive organization. And you probably had numerous other groups that I'm not aware of, but you know, some of these groups developed because of an aversion to some of the, you know, Muslims have a strict tradition they have to follow in prison as well as outside prison, and so does the Moorish organizations. You know, so a lot of these people, they didn't want to have these restrictions placed on them, you know, as far as not being able to gamble or engage in certain activities in prison that could lead, as much as they talk about Muslims and they try to give them a bad name and the Moorish organizations, these organizations are essentially there to try to keep order in the institution, to keep people from harming each other. You know, our philosophy is that we shouldn't be fighting amongst ourselves, you know, and that it's really the prison administration that's the enemy, you know, and this is what we should have. And they are, which is really, I mean, they show the public one face, but they show us another face entirely when they are. And I'm not saying that all prison officials are bad. You have some very good correctional officers and caseworkers. I mean, they're just difficult to find. But for the most part, the inmate population is looked upon as just trash. And the prison administration exerts considerable effort into trying to keep division and dissension amongst the groups, because they're afraid that if the inmates unite, then they're going to have a problem on their hands, and they probably would. But Muslims don't do a lot of the things that other groups do. The Moorish Science Temple of America is another group. It's an Islamic organization. It doesn't do a lot of the things that other groups do. Some of the other gangs are what they call street gangs. We call them organizations, like the Growth and Development. That's a positive organization. You know, they went from being a street gang and developed into a political organization. And these are the groups, strangely enough, that the prison administration is more afraid of, because they're more organized, they're more disciplined, and they study and they learn things. You know, they would rather prefer you to be in a street gang that doesn't affiliate itself with anything positive. You know, now, as far as the Crips and the Bloods are concerned, they are looked upon as just basically a street gang, but even they have a philosophy. You know, the word blood, it stands for, I can't think of the name, but it's an acronym for the group. Crips has this acronym, it's the name that it implies does not comport with the things that they try to associate with the group. But I'll think of it in a minute, and then I'll relate it.
Okay. You mentioned we have these different groups, and the ones that you talked about mostly are positive. Of course, the Crips and the Bloods probably have a little bit different take on things and the way they act within the walls and all. But probably the biggest gang, or the most important gang there, is the prison administration. You know, I mean, how do they fit into that same kind of category as some of these other groups? How are they looked on, you know, the administration looked on by people in the different religious groups or the different social groups that we talked about?
Well, each of those groups, they, like I said, they have their own philosophy, and it, which purports to be something positive and constructive. But you have the problem with people coming into these organizations and trying to take them into directions that they weren't intended to go in. You know, like, you know, you have people who join a lot of these groups because they have a propensity for being involved in trouble or conflicts with people, and then, you know, they feel that, you know, if I get in something, I got somebody to watch my back, all I got to do is, you know, is just holler for some help. And a lot of times, sadly enough, that's the case. Whereas, like, the difference between the Muslims and some of the other groups is that you have to be right before they're going to back your play. You know, if you out here doing something that you're not supposed to be doing, and they find out about it, they're going to tell you on your own, or either they're going to discipline you themselves. Whereas, you know, with a lot of the latter organizations and groups that come into prison, it was like, you know, he's one of us, and we're going to ride with him. We don't care if he's right or wrong. We'll straighten him out later on. But if, you know, he get into it with somebody, you know, they got to deal with all of us. You know, and that's what tends to give people the, you know, the negative impressions about, because people do have a tendency to do negative things.
I want to remind everyone that you are listening to Jaws of Justice Radio on KKFI 90.1 FM.
And my name is Jeff Humfeld, and with me today is Keith Brownell, who you just heard speaking, and Al Bay. And we're talking about violence and the whole mindset of violence within the prisons. One of the things that, you know, has been looked at and got a lot of play in the early 2000s is rape behind the bars. And the Congress passed and signed this Prison Rape Elimination Act, which President Bush signed in 2003. You know, Al, we had talked beforehand that you really didn't have much knowledge about what effect that had, because you've been out and all. But Keith, you were around during the early days of this and have had a lot of contact, continue to have contact with guys behind the bars. What kind of effect did this act have? Do you think it really made a difference in the rape situation and also other violence?
Well, it went into effect in 2002, and I was in prison up until 2005. And I got out for a brief period, and then I went back, and I remained until 2008. I didn't see any of impact that it was having as far as the way that the prisons were operated in Missouri. You know, if you take people and you put them in unnatural conditions, then you're going to have unnatural behavior. You know, like, I think there's probably a lot of people who may have participated in rapes in prison that if they had not been in prison, they probably would not have done that. But it is a very stressful situation to be in, to take a man off the streets away from around females and put him in a prison where he doesn't have access to anything but men. And then you start having all these distorted and perverted thoughts in your mind. You start seeing little young kids, I mean, young guys come in there, you know, and they start looking like women, you know, or something similar to women. And you know, and you just have all these creepy thoughts that come into your head. I think the biggest impact that anything that had anything to do with rape in prison was probably the AIDS virus. When that came into the prisons, people start recognizing, whoa, I better slow my roll and start thinking about what I'm doing here, because this can really, you know, mess me around. You know, I saw that, but I mean, I think that probably may have just been a period of time, but I haven't seen the prison officials in the state of Missouri. I don't know what they do anywhere else. I haven't seen the prison officials do anything to try to discourage people from raping other prisoners. And, you know, I might mention the fact that while I was in prison, that was one of my biggest campaigns, one of my major campaigns that I was on to try to discourage this type of behavior. And I ran into a lot of difficulty. It was hostility and resentment from the prison administration. You know, a lot of the prisoners didn't like it, but there were a lot of times, by me being the type of person that I was and having been confined for so long, that, you know, when these situations developed, I was just, in a lot of cases, able to just talk to people, go to them and explain to them, look, you know, this is what you're doing is not right, man. You know, you was given the opportunity to come in here and be a man when you was here. You know, people left you alone. Or it was some people that I had to go talk to. I mean, I had came to their aid when they was in these type of situations and intervened in those situations. So that made it easy for me to talk to them. But there were other times when those situations got out of hand and they had to be dealt with in other ways that, you know, I would rather not have to deal with.
Well, we had talked about, you know, before the show about this particular act, the act of rape and all, and how this is not just a physical thing. It's an emotional or mental thing too. It's a matter of power. What is that dynamic? That people see, you know, that happens with folks. You know, they have to have power over someone else, or you know, it's not a matter of also just grabbing people up and holding them down and doing this, but it's also a matter of threatening from a different aspect. In other words, you know, if you don't, you know, I'm going to get you.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, during the time I was incarcerated, it was definitely going on. And, you know, the worst part about it, people had to come to the terms of dealing with this, you know, as a victim, you know, and even the perpetrators themselves found themselves a lot of times in other troubles. But the biggest issue, I think, was the victim having to come to terms with this, because this was, to some extent, this was, you know, their manhood. You know, this was something that they couldn't get back. You know, this was something they had to live with for years. And personally, I knew a guy who, I won't call his name, but he had went through this and had suffered at the hands of perpetrators. And I feel like when he got out, he had started a family, he had got married, and he was still dealing with this. You know, I saw him occasionally, and he had started drinking heavily out of the bottles, you know, hard liquor. And it always struck me because this brother eventually killed himself, you know. And I can only imagine that it was the extent of what he had to go through in prison, you know. But he eventually took some cocaine. I imagine he was a drug user, but he overdid it. I don't know whether it was purposely or not, but he overdid it and blew his heart up. So, you know, it gave me an example of what a person has to endure, even over time. And we're talking about years later, you know, and I thought he was doing well, but he got out, had a couple of children and whatnot, but obviously this thing was still haunting him, you know. And I guess this is the way it is with most of the victims who come out of prison, is something they have to deal with, and it's hard.
With that, we're going to go to our calendar of events, and when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines.
And now the calendar for September 15th, 2014. First Call presents A Night of Recovery and Hope with Chris Herron. Chris realized his dream by playing for the Boston Celtics in the NBA, only to lose it all to addiction. He has refocused his life to put sobriety and family above all else. This fundraiser will be held at the Basketball Experience at the Sprint Arena in downtown Kansas City, Missouri. Tuesday, September 16th, reception at 6 p.m. and speaker at 7 p.m. To register for this event, call 816-800-8045 or go to www.firstcallkc.org and click on the events link. The NAACP KC Branch General Membership Meeting will be Tuesday, September 16th, 6:30 p.m. at the Brush Creek Community Center, 3801 Emmanuel Cleaver Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri. They will be working on preparations for elections of officers and an update of their partnership with Missourians Against the Death Penalty on their shared opposition to the death penalty. Become a hunger champion during Hunger Action Month by rallying your neighbors to collect food for harvesters. Starting Saturday, September 20th, you can pick up bags to distribute to your neighbors. Then on Saturday, September 27th, you can pick up the bags of donated food and bring them to harvesters or a designated food drop-off site. You can sign up to be a hunger champion by calling 816-929-3055 or emailing fooddrive@harvesters.org. My name is Keith Brown-Eal. These events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org.
This is Jeff Humfeld, and we are back on Jaws of Justice Radio here on KKFI 90.1 FM. And my guest today is Al Bay, and we're talking about violence in prison and the mindset that one has to have to survive, but also, we want to talk a little bit now, Al, about what you see in the neighborhoods, and in the young people today that are out on the street, do you see some of that same mindset out on the street? People, you know, all of this killing and all this stuff that's going on now.
Jeff, yes, I do. As a matter of fact, basically, it's kind of centered around the same premise: survival of the best. What you have in prison is people who are struggling, and they're doing whatever they can to survive. You know, and it's compounded actually when you come out here in society, because you have all these different elements. You know, your drugs and your guns, and you know, the need to impress people more. So basically it's the same parallel. You know, you got people that's, you know, preying on weak people, and it's more or less survival of the best. So it kind of correlates.
All right, we do want to open up our phone lines here in the second half, and if you have a comment or a question, that number is 816-931-5534. You can call in now, 816-931-5534 or 931-KKFI. Give us a call, and we'd love to hear your story or see whether we can't answer your question. You know, just as we had talked about the different gangs and the different groupings in prison, we have those same things, of course, out here on the street. In fact, a lot of them started out here on the street and went to the prisons. But as I said, probably the most important gang behind the bars is the administration. We have that same thing with the police also. Do you think that, I mean, do you see some parallels between the way the prison administration worked and the police are acting out on the street too?
I do, Jeff, and I think it's more or less about control. You know, in both situations, there's a serious need for control. You know, they need to show force at all times. And for me, when I look at the police, both in and out of the institution, I see people who were trained. They were trained to be brutal, in a sense. They were trained to be on the attack at all times, you know. So there is a serious correlation between the two. And for me, I think they kind of act on the same premise for the most part.
Okay, we do have a caller on the line. A caller, are you on the air? What's your name and what part of town are you calling from?
Yeah, hi. This is Amy in Prairie Village.
Okie doke, Amy. What's your question?
Well, I wanted to ask about dealing with rape in prisons, and ask if it's similar to dealing with rape outside of prisons. If there's trouble with people reporting it, or if it's
okay, so you want to know whether, you know, we get these statistics as to what kind of numbers there are of rapes behind bars, and we know that out in the public, only a small percentage of people actually report their rapes or whatever. Is that kind of the same thing behind bars, you think, Al, or?
To a great extent, prison rape is generally something that's kind of kept, you know, under wraps. You know, especially a lot of the guys, they don't want to come out and say, well, this is something that happened to me. So they kind of deal with it. You know, they live with it. And I think in society there's, you know, some similar, you know, behaviors. I think it's reported more in society than it is in the prison system, you know, because like I say, this is a manly thing. They don't want everybody to know, and they know it's not going to really have any effect as far as enforcement goes. So, you know, why talk about it? You know, that's kind of the mindset in prison.
Well, we thank you very much for your call. We do have another caller on the line.
Thank you.
Caller, you're on the air. What is your name and what part of town are you calling from, please?
Yes, my name is Robert, and I'm calling from Midtown, Kansas City.
Robert, what's your question or your comment?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to commend your guest, Brother Al Bay, and also Brother Keith, who had to leave, because myself, I also spent time incarcerated. I did 13 years in the federal system and a brief stay in Moberly in the Missouri Department of Corrections. And, you know, just from hearing the brothers' names, I know they are from the Muslim sect, and those type of faith-based organizations in the prison, they do give you a more foundation of getting yourself together. We may shame in the system for this and that or our wrongs, but once you get in there and you get with these different types of organizations, they would kind of help a brother to get back on track. Me, myself, I come from the Christian community, and we basically have the same thing. But one thing that the brothers didn't speak to, what I'm saying, he did earlier time in the 80s, but I've been out 9 years, and the more of the street gangs operating in the prisons right now is coming from all different states. You got the Mexican Mafia. You got your Black Disciples. You got these type of gangs that are operating inside the prison. And it's like the brother stated, it's more of a mindset of protection. You know, you getting up, and that's your family. And they get with these groups, you know, and try to make sure they can make it through the system, but also you do have, you know, your corruption that's going on, and they are down for theirs, one of theirs, like one of the brothers said. He may be wrong in two left shoes, and we would deal with him later, but at that moment is to protect him, you know, and keep him with the mindset of in the organization. So I just like to say, you know, everybody in prison is not bad. A lot come out good. I've been out 9.5 years working 2 jobs. So my story is a success, and also counsel people that are going into the system now. Trying to let them know what they expect, and you can make it out here. You know, I pay taxes, I vote, I drive good now, and have a nice home. It is achievable. But the people who are in charge, politicians, they need to look and see, we're going to eat somewhere. And they can either give us that opportunity coming out and try to help us wean back into society, or most of them will resort back to what got them in there in the first place.
Okay, I want to ask you real quick, because we do have some other calls that are waiting on the line. You said that you counsel folks. Is there a particular place that you do that, or you just do that with people that you know or you meet?
No, I basically work with federal inmates, because that's where I did most of my time, and I do it on the Missouri side and the Kansas side, and I'm familiar with those probation officers since I'm out of the system, and they know I was a success while I was in there as well as out here, and they call me back every other month, but only who are pre-sentence investigation or out on bond that are going into the system, and I basically just let them know what to expect, what to stay away from, and you can make it, you know, keep that line of communication with your family open and get with those brothers that are positive. You can find whatever you're looking for in there. But if you focus your mind on getting out from day one going in, you can come back out and make it.
We want to thank you very much for what you're doing and also for your call. We're going to go to our next caller.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Caller, you're on the air. What is your name and what part of town are you calling from?
Well, my name is Reginald Perkins. I'm calling from Jackson County, east side of town.
Okay.
And actually, I want to thank my uncle. That's my uncle you're speaking with today. And he's out putting it out there that a lot of these guys that do go into the system, they're not bad people. They just made bad decisions, and society doesn't allow them to prove themselves that they are just a person that made some bad decisions in life, and allow them to get back to what they would call a normal life, which is that's what most people do when they want to get out of jail. But, you know, you go and you put in so many applications, and there's a lot of programs that will help you, but the time consumed within going through the program, you don't have a lot of opportunity to, you know, sustain your daily living, which you end up falling back into trouble, because most people still have daily needs. And to put it out there, like, well, there needs to be an organization that's out there that allows them to show that, hey, man, a lot of these guys have skills in the work fields that are hiring, but they can't get past the stigma of what they've been arrested for in the past.
All right, we need you to turn your radio down because we're getting a lot of feedback from your radio. We can hear ourselves.
We need you to turn
Oh, okay. Sorry about that, sir.
That's all right. Mr. Bay, I imagine you have something to say to your nephew.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for your call, Reggie. Good to hear from you. Good to hear that you're doing well. And you got a point. You know, we have to be focused. Focus, focus. I mean, this is something we need to do from the time we realize we've made a mistake. We need to focus on how we're going to correct that mistake. And if it takes 10 years sometime to go through the system, we need to stay focused, you know. And one of the things a lot of us do, we go in the system, but we don't prepare to come out. You know, we look forward to coming out, but we don't prepare to come out. So this is something we have to do on a consistent daily basis. What am I going to do when this time comes when they say you're free to go? You know, for the time I was in the institution, I saw guys come in, they played basketball to the day they left, and then I saw them come back within a month, 6 months. You know, so it's all about preparation and focus.
Yeah, I want to remind everyone that the telephone number here is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534. You can call in with your comments or questions. Al, you know, you had talked about how you used the Muslim religion to reform yourself and to bring some order into your life. What are some of the basic tenets that, you know, you use to help change your life?
Well, like I said, when I went in, Jeff, initially I got in trouble. You know, I feel like, you know, this is something I need to do. I need to make a statement. I had a lot of time to serve, so I was kind of wild, you know. But at some point, I stopped what I was doing and became part of the Moorish organization, which I give a lot of honor and respect to because it's what made me be still. You know, it set me down and made me be still so I could hear the still small voice that speaks within. And at that point, I started to build. I was able to build. You know, that was my foundation. And it allowed me to build upon that. You know, I went to college. Platt College was in there for the time I was there. And I was able to get 2 degrees, paralegal practice and procedure and computers in the law. I went on to get other achievements through a certain program, positive mental attitude. They had a program in there, anger management. So basically what I had to do was take advantage of everything that was accessible to me to make me be still. I mean, that's one of the things we have to do when we get in these situations, be still and listen.
Okay, we do have another caller on the line, I believe. Caller, you are on the air. What is your name and what part of town are you calling from?
My name is Nathaniel, and I'm from the Central City. And my question and comment, it's really more so of a comment, but I think with the prison systems being a for-profit enterprise, it's a sad tragedy that our country has allowed these people to become a pawns in this profit scheme. I think it ought to be illegal to make prisons for profit. I mean, there's enough problems before you get to prison, and that's one of the major problems. Most of the children who are in, most of the people in prison have developmental problems and issues that haven't been arrested. They have to wait till they go to jail, unfortunately, before they are in a disciplined place where they can get the type of nurturing so they can develop properly.
Well, I won't give an opinion other than I agree that we need to take a look at this whole idea of prisons for profit.
Right, I'd agree with that. That's my main part of it. As long as that prison for profit scheme is there, they're going to continually to misuse people, our human resources. They're going to deny their potential. So that's the major point. Get rid of the prison for profit scheme. Thank you again. Bye.
Okie dokie.
Say, I don't think there's a way that you can have a prison
and it's not set up for profit. I mean, you have private corporations who build prisons and they invest in prisons, but even the state-run prisons are based on some kind of system of profit. And a lot of times the profit takes precedence over what's in the best interest of the people that they're supposed to be caring for while they're in prison.
Okie doke. Keith, one of the things I had asked Al was, you know, what were some of the things that helped you turn yourself cope with the realities that you had to deal with day to day behind bars and, you know, get away from the violence and I think it would, what was the term that you used, Al, punks, tuna fish or something?
Punks, packs, and tuna fish was a philosophy they used. That was the mindset of many of them who were bent on, violating other people.
Well, I was one of the unfortunate ones that never quite managed to get away from the violence that existed in the prison atmosphere. But in situations where I had to resort to violence, I always tried to be sure that it was a justification for using it as opposed to just using it for simply because I could. And, people respected that. You know, when I had difficulties with people where those situations developed, people would always say it would be talk on the yard. They say, man, if they was messing with that guy there, they was wrong because he don't bother nobody. And if he had to do something like that, then he had a reason for doing it. And some of the violence that I was involved in, it didn't always involve prisoners. It involved staff members because they tried to become aggressive or assert their authority in matters where they shouldn't have done that. And like I said earlier, you have to stand up against the prison administration because they are the biggest oppressors sometimes when it comes to people trying to navigate their way through problems in prison. And you asked me a while ago what turned me around. It was my disgust at the people who were supposed to be trying to rehabilitate me. You know, and I seen how corrupt the system was. You know, and I recognized the fact that if I was going to rehabilitate myself, I had to do it on my own because everything that they had in prison, pretty much, it was a sham. It was based on trying to get money or profit. You know, they receive money for these programs that they run, and a lot of them, they just schemes to keep the money coming in and keep people on the payroll. So I had to assume the responsibility of rehabilitating myself. I think my biggest inspiration is when I read the autobiography of Malcolm X, and then I came into the organization known as the Moore Science Temple of America. But me looking at the life of Malcolm X and seeing how he was able to turn his life around, it made me also realize that there was some hope that I could do the same thing.
Okay, I want to remind folks that we do have phone lines open and we only have 3 or 4 minutes, so if you were thinking about making a call, make it now. It's 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534. One of the things that I think that we haven't talked about today, but is that we know about PTSD and folks coming back from war and things like this, but some of us don't have any idea that or realize that prisoners come out from prison with some of those same feelings. But first we're going to go to a caller. We have a caller. You're on the air. What is your name and what part of town you come from?
Hi, I'm Thomas. I'm from Midtown, KC. I just heard it said that some of the prisons set up are for profit. I was under the assumption that prisons were set up, the money came from tax revenue. So could you explain the dynamics of that and specifically how prisons profit off their inmates?
Well, initially when prisons receive their money, they get appropriations from the legislature to which is typically described as a budget. Okay, each year the budget increases, and they have to ask for more money. And their biggest fear is that the budget is going to be cut. So they have to come up with ways to keep asking for more and more money because they want to have enough money to be able to run the prisons. And then anything that's left over, it finds its way into other avenues.
Sure. I also heard it mentioned that a lot of people are not prepared to go back out into the real world. Would you say that prison needs to be reformed in the sense that there needs to be more education in the prison system so that people learn real-world skills when they come back out and have skills to be able to fit into the job market?
Well, yes, but a lot of the people who are running the prisons, they don't have real-world skills themselves. So how are they going to teach it to somebody else?
Right.
Okay, we do have
to be something that needs to be reformed on the political level.
Yes. We do have one more caller, and we have just about enough time to take that call, so we thank you very much for your call.
Sure.
Caller, you're on the line. What's your name, and what part of town you're calling for? And we're running very short, so make it quick.
Okay, my name is Pamela Rupert, and I'm calling from Midtown, Kansas City. And I just wanted to add to the comment about how people who have been incarcerated, especially people that have felonies, are discriminated against as far as getting a job. But another issue I think is very important, and that is that a lot of them cannot find a good place to live because apartments and landlords will not rent to somebody that has a felony. And I know of several people that have been incarcerated, and then they can't find a place to live, and they're out on the street.
Okay, and with that, we're going to have to end our show today. Our time has run out, and
okay.
we want to thank you for your comments, and of course, Mr. Bay.
One thing, real quick, you have to, those coming out have to revert to their families, you know. The families are going to be the anchor that's going to get them started. You know, they might have to stay with a family member for 6 months or so, but, you know, they're going to have a real strong family base.
Okie doke. And Keith Brownell, we want to thank you both and Al Bay for being here with us today.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following story comes to us out of Chicago, Illinois.
Right now, looking at some statistics here, really numbers here that have a lot of people considering this and thinking about what you can do. One in 68 children right here in the U.S. is diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. And while a lot of medications have been proven ineffective over the years, one treatment right now has been giving some families some serious hope, and we're talking about medical marijuana.
Joining us this morning is Jennifer Swanson Collins, who has personal first-hand experience with this. She's treating her two autistic children with cannabis oil. Jennifer, first of all, thank you so much for joining
us. Absolutely, love to be here.
I want to talk about one of the biggest misconceptions with cannabis oil, because the active ingredient is something actually called CBD, correct?
Yes.
It's not the THC that a lot of people associate with marijuana. It's the psychoactive chemical.
Yes. Exactly. No THC whatsoever.
So explain this to people at home who are saying, well, that's not right. You shouldn't give your children a drug that has a psychoactive effect.
This does not have a psychoactive effect. This is made from industrial hemp. So this is not made from marijuana. This is made from industrial hemp, and it is considered by the FDA a supplement. It is not considered a drug. It's not scheduled. So it's legal in all 50 states. It can be purchased by anyone. So there's no concern to give it to a child. There's no concern to, I would recommend speaking to a pediatrician or some medical, you know, your pediatrician or whoever you're seeing to treat your child's autistic symptoms. But it is certainly no concern there that you're giving your child any sort of psychoactive effects.
Okay.
And Jennifer, a long list of disorders associated with autism. What kind of results, specifically with your family, with your son, have you been getting with this cannabis oil?
I have seen amazing results, and I've been at this for a while. My sons were diagnosed 5 years ago, and so I've been trying multiple biological and medical interventions, and so I've kind of run the gamut, and some very successfully and some not so successfully. So I don't just get excited and, you know, this is the next new trend.
Sure.
and wait for it's the effects,
error.
You know. When I came across this, I thought, hemp oil, what on earth does that have to do with autism? And so I researched it a little bit. I went to a conference. I heard Dr. Bradstreet speak about it and a Dr. John Hicks. And I was shocked at all the ways it could help children with autism. It affects their nervous system. It affects their brain. It helps their immune system.
How long do you want the drug war to last? Well, that's too long. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
Ready? One, two, three. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow.
We hope you enjoy today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Mid-Coast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We thank our engineer, Jessica Thomas, host of Before the Dawn on Sunday morning from 4 to 7 a.m. Our outro music is Better Man from the Plan for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m. followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beauticious Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio, KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musical.
Myself. Lord, I'm gonna teach myself how to understand. Gonna make myself a